Moncrief on News Talk.
Indeed, it is time for parenting, and Joanna Fortune joins us once again. Afternoon, Joanna.
Afternoon, Sean.
Right, first question. Want to exercise quite a few parents, I'm thinking. My 11, nearly 12-year-old girl is in sixth class in an all-girls school and has recently started walking to the local park with her friends after school on Fridays. It's the first time she's been allowed to do this on her own. She always has a phone on her. They spend their time in the park chatting and recording TikTok videos, and I collect her after a couple of hours. My concern is that she's recently mentioned boys in the park and the fact that some of our friends are meeting boys, which in today's language means kissing. These are boys of the same age in a local school that the girls know through other activities. She's very open with me, so she chats to me about it, including mentioning one boy she knew from a previous summer camp who she bumped into the park one Friday and has since been texting. I have read these texts and they are very innocent, and he has asked her a couple of times if she has met anyone yet. Should I tell her she's too young to kiss boys, or is it normal for this age? I'm conscious that I might end up making too big of a deal of it. I went to an all-girls school myself. I did not have any male friends as a teenager, so I was awkward when I got to college, and this is not something I wish for her.
Oh, it's a big one, isn't it? No matter how old she is. I think the really positive thing here, though, is that she's talking to you about it. She's being really open, and that's your in. You know, this is, she's cueing you that things are changing. New experiences are being introduced to my peer group. She hasn't experienced it yet, but it's coming towards her and she's wondering about it. She's curious about it, all of which is really healthy. Sexual curiosity, completely normal part of this stage of development. And generally speaking, there's no kind of right age, wrong age, normal age around any of this. But between 12 and 15 years old, so quite a broad spread there, tends to be the first time somebody has their kiss, their first kiss. Mm. Okay, so she's not overly young and she's not also at the upper end of that age swing either. The way you approach this is what's going to make the difference here. So you have to, as you have so far, avoid chastising, shaming, and certainly don't go down the road of banning. If you say you're too young for this, immediately she's going to use the benchmark of, but what about my same age friends? They're doing it. So you're wrong, Mom, because remember, at this age, it's the peer group is the important hub of social development more than parents. The fact that she's bringing this to you, my inference would be, is like she is wondering about it. She is curious, but she's not certain. So you've got a great opportunity to reflect with her on this. You know, tell her that you're really happy that she's talking to you about this stuff and that she can always talk to you about this stuff, even as she gets older. Emphasize with her, though, that when you're talking to her about first kisses, that first kisses are special. You know, there's no need to rush it, and she should take her time so that her first kiss is with somebody that she's really interested in kissing, rather than just feeling, well, I better do it and just kiss somebody just to get it done. You know, talk to her about that value of waiting until she feels ready. And I think that's a good in then to deepen the conversation I'm hoping you've already been having about sex and relationships and facts of life stuff as she's been growing up, is to now extend that conversation and go a bit deeper into sex, relationships and consent. And making sure that you emphasize these is really important about, you know, everybody should ask permission before they touch anybody else in any way. Saying no is okay, and listening to the feelings in her tummy. If her tummy says, uh-oh, this isn't a good idea, trust her own instincts and really empower her that, yes, it's okay that your friends are doing it because we're not going to shame anybody. And yes, it's okay if you want to wait before you do it. But regardless, let's keep talking about it. I think that's the easiest way, is to keep that door of communication open.
Yeah, I mean, I'm basing this on my my experience as a parent. But there's almost a kind of that question that she said there about her friend has texted her and asked her, have you met anyone yet? That seems to be the question around that age cohort. They're all asking each other with sort of lends it an air of inevitability.
It does, you see, and I think that's why you don't want to kind of shut this down and make her feel that whatever's going on with her and her friends is wrong or something shameful. But, you know, if this boy is asking her in otherwise fairly innocent texts, this is something that's going on in her peer group, who has kissed, who hasn't kissed. Mm. And again, that's really quite normal. So the important piece, though, is that you empower her to be confident to say, I haven't, because I haven't met anybody that I really want to kiss. So I haven't done that yet, and I'm not going to till I meet somebody that I really want to kiss.
Yeah. I don't know where the phrase met someone came from, because it's, you know.
It's around a few years, though.
It is.
Yeah, yeah.
It's you know, so good. Like with my own kids, to say I met someone, so they go, what do you mean by that? You know, things are going to go nuclear very quickly, you know.
I actually remember somebody saying it to me in a clinical context, just casually saying, and I met this person. I was like, oh, that's really nice. Where did you meet them? I'm feeling like they were horrified. That's a very personal question. Okay.
Okay, next question is, I'm writing about my 10-year-old who this autumn revealed that his best friend has been hitting him since last year in school. The other child had a big trauma in his life, and from what I can make out, the hitting started after this. There was a third child in the group who moved away over the summer. It seems that my son could manage it when the other friend was being hit too, but now he's the only target. We contacted the school, and the response was a generalised, these things happen with friendship, etc., and that they would keep an eye on things. The hitting stopped for one day and resumed again. My boy has gained confidence now and is hitting back, so I'm not sure about contacting them again. It seems they are reluctant to intervene too much with the other child because of his circumstances. This makes me wonder, could my son end up in trouble if I tell them how he's hitting back now and the situation would be misread? In the third consecutive month of it happening, he sees this as the only solution that works. He cries hysterically if I ask how his day went and protests that he doesn't want to talk about it. He speaks so aggressively about his former friend, it is very worrying. He's extremely frustrated and has been hitting his younger sibling a lot. We encouraged him not to engage and to avoid this child in school as much as he can. It's difficult, though, especially when they were moved away from each other but are still in the same pod. The boy was hitting my son and pinching him as they did their schoolwork. At this stage, I'm wondering, will play therapy or some other therapy be needed? I wonder, is that the way forward, as it's clear he needs to be empowered and the school are not dealing with it, although we can see they may be reluctant to. At my wit's end here about this, to be honest.
Oh, I'm sure you are. I can really feel that, you know, but there's a few things here. You know, yes, your empathy, your awareness of this child's had a tough time and he's suffered a big trauma, you know, whatever that might be, and his circumstances and all of that. And certainly that goes away to perhaps explaining his aggressive behavior, but that doesn't mean it excuses it. Mm. And, you know, boundaries are really, really important, even and sometimes especially when there has been a traumatic experience, that communicates in a really safe way that boundaries are there to keep us safe and to stop you and situations getting out of control, and that we all operate within those limits and boundaries, and it's how we get along. So I don't, you know, I wouldn't move down the road of minimizing or dismissing or, you know, making it okay that this child is behaving this way because he's had a trauma or a tough time in his young life. I think it's something to still kind of challenge in a very compassionate way and say, look, I get all that, but this isn't okay. Because when you talk about your son at this stage has gained confidence and is hitting back, I suppose my curiosity is sparked in saying, well, is it confidence or is it frustration? That actually what he's gained is frustration and escalating frustration with a situation that has been going on a really long time. And it's not okay to go into school and not feel safe and to feel attacked in school on a repeated basis. And, you know, like, I'm the first one to say when it comes to kids and friendships and things that go on in friendships that, with rare exception, we parents need to stay out of that stuff and let kids work it out. But this is above and beyond. This is one of those times when you go, do you know what, it's not okay that my son is going to school and he's hitting, and now he's so frustrated he's also aggressively acting out. It's spilling out from school into home. You know, he's crying hysterically if you ask how his day was, and he's saying he doesn't want to talk about it, but he is communicating about it in his behavior. Mm-hmm. He's speaking aggressively, he's frustrated, he's hitting his younger sibling. He actually is communicating his struggle with all of this, and it's escalating. So look, you could go down the road of child psychotherapy, play therapy, you could certainly do that, but My worry about that is you're going to be taking him somewhere to let off some steam of this, but the frustrating situation is ongoing. So that doesn't mean it's going to stop. It may be that you're trying to help him manage something that he really shouldn't be managing at 10 years old. So I think actually you do need to call a meeting with the school and maybe, you know, put in writing why you're requesting the meeting, what it's specifically about. And you can acknowledge, look, I know this child has had a tough time and I'm certainly not looking to make that tougher. However, my son has to be physically safe when he goes to school, and he's currently not, and that is not okay. So I actually think it is time to formally meet the school and raise this with them and really not allow it to be dismissed as in a generalized way, because this isn't generalized peer interaction stuff. This is over and above, and it's going on a really long time, and it's having a negative impact on your son's emotional well-being. So I would definitely act on this.
Yeah, because I mean, obviously hitting back isn't solving the problem. It's possibly only making it worse. And to some extent, it's brutalizing this young fella because he's learning to do this now.
Exactly. And it's also reinforcing that how you deal with frustration is with aggression. And that's not a message you want a 10-year-old boy get, any child, but at 10 years old, that's not a message I want these kids having. It has to be dealt with, and it's happening in school during school hours. The school have to respond.
Yeah, I'm surprised the school hasn't responded to this. Of course, we don't know what the trauma was.
No, but again, like, you know, and I mean, I work with trauma all the time, and I get that, you know, it absolutely, you know, people develop all kinds of strategies, especially children, to try and manage, cope and make sense of things that otherwise haven't made sense. And it may well explain his aggressive impulses and aggressive behavior, but the child who's experienced the trauma should not be given the message that it's okay to do that, because it isn't. Regardless of your life experiences, we understand why you're doing it. Let's help you find another way of expressing those feelings.
Yeah, indeed. Right, we do have to take a break. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk. After that, curiosity about poo. Joanna Fortune is still with us. Aoife says, this is in relation to the first question that we got in that Joanna was dealing with, that was about what's the appropriate age to start kissing or meet someone, as they call it nowadays. And this was in relation to an 11-year-old little girl. Aoife says, I feel like the real issue with kids at this stage is peer pressure more than the actual kissing. I don't remember feeling particularly good about my first kiss, my first drink, or losing my virginity. There was just a relief rather than an enjoyment. That's not the way these things should be. Well, indeed, couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
P. and Carlo says, I guess as a parent, I don't need to worry if my son met someone, as it's only kissing. One will be more worried if he knew someone. You mean in the biblical sense. Somebody else wants some clarification. Does Joanna mean to tell the 11-year-old girl to wait until she meets someone she likes, or to wait until she's really sure she likes them? You could really like someone after 5 minutes. And meet is used in the old-fashioned way, they mean. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that now. I think, yeah, it's about being sure that she meets someone that she likes, bumps into, gets to know somebody she likes, and feels this is the person that I want to share my first kiss with. I don't know if that's going to be 5 minutes or if it's going to be lots of time of getting to know somebody, but it seems to be they only go to this park once a week, you know, that she's not in school with the boys in question, that it's a once a week thing. I think talking to her about taking her time and being certain and trusting her instincts is the way forward with that.
Yeah, I suppose to know when it's the right reason to be doing it for.
And just to keep talking to her about that stuff, and it's okay to explore it and think it out loud.
Right, next question is this. I have a curious four-year-old, just turned four in September. I don't mind her curiosity. In fact, the opposite. I embrace it. But what I do mind is the obsession with seeing her poo. It's been going on all summer. Not sure when we first noticed. I saw a small brown smear on the bathroom tile next to the toilet. And it wasn't until I saw it the second time that I realised what it was. So we kept an eye on her when she was in the toilet and caught her sticking her hand down under while on the toilet. We explain that we don't do that, germs, etc. It's now a regular thing. On occasion, we do find a poop on the floor. She was then locking the bathroom door when she was in it, so we took off the lock. Sometimes we find poo on the toilet paper roll, her attempt to clean her hands but not realising the evidence on the toilet roll. Sometimes she says she didn't do it, or that she wants to see what colour brown is. What do I do?
Oh, you know, it sounds like a really normal urge to explore and explore our bodily functions, our body, which at 4 years old is exactly appropriate behavior. Now, the poop thing isn't obviously what you want her to be exploring, but have expressed some curiosity even yourself about why is it that this particular tactile experience is appealing to her. Be curious about the level of sensory play she's having and experiencing during her day. If you're thinking, look, we don't do a lot of that messy play, start doing it. And if you're thinking we do a bit of it, increase it. Either way, I think she's going to need more of that. Because children who don't get enough access to sensory play, and again, you might think you're doing plenty, but she might be a child who is quite sensory seeking and actually needs above and beyond what you think is enough for her. But if they're not getting enough for them, you know, in terms of access to sensory play, they may resort to playing with their poo because it is such a sensory tactile experience. Mm-hmm. And you're doing the right thing about boundaries, explaining it's not safe that poop stays in the toilet, but a fascination with what's going in and out of the body at that age is also quite normal. So when she says to you, you know, I want to see what it feels like, I want to see what color brown it is, I like touching it, if she's saying things like that, offer her an alternative. So you can, using that kind of ACT ACT model, you know, acknowledge her feeling. Yeah, you're really curious about it. You're really interested in it. I'm acknowledging that. And then you communicate a limit. It's not okay to touch her poo though, because it's not safe. It's not clean. That could make you sick and it has to stay in the toilet. And then use your tea to target an alternative. Do you know what we're going to do? We're going to make chocolate Play-Doh together. And that just means you put cocoa powder into the Play-Doh mix when you're making it up. And it's going to be the right texture, color, but a much more pleasant scent. I hope that she's going to be able to play with that with you instead. So involve her in the actual making it, because that's a sensory experience in and of itself. And then when you've made the chocolate Play-Doh, allow her to sit and manipulate it and pull it apart and squeeze it and roll it or whatever she wants to do with it. But at least it's safe. So it is satisfying her curiosity, but in a much safer way. So you're acknowledging her curiosity. You're not shaming her. You're not giving out to her, because it just won't work at that age. You're communicating that very clear limit and boundary, and you have to hold to that, and then targeting the alternative. Because at the moment, I think you're definitely doing the limit, but you have to help her to understand her curiosity is healthy and normal. And there's a different way of exploring that.
Is she a bit young? She's four, going into the toilet by herself.
No, loads of them do that, particularly if they're in preschool, because they're encouraged to do lots of independent stuff when they're in preschool. I mean, the locking the door, yeah, I wouldn't want her locking the door just in case she got stuck in there and the key is on the other side and you've all of that drama. So taking the key away or whatever it was with the lock, that's no harm, actually, in general. But it also communicates a little bit of awareness that I know I shouldn't do this. That's why I'm locking the door, to keep you out. Yes. And I know I shouldn't have this on my hands, so I'm wiping it on the toilet roll. But I'm still developing that sense of cause and effect. So I don't yet know when you see the soiled toilet roll, you'll put it all together anyway. I might well feel I've gotten away with that. So she's really at that age where I'm beginning to get there's trouble involved if I do this, but I haven't quite nailed that yet. So I still need a little bit of help.
Paul says, not to state the obvious here, but kids do the strangest things. As a young kid, my mother used to find me standing in the toilet. To this day, I have absolutely no idea why I was doing that. Yes, indeed.
Absolutely. I mean, it's like a big puddle, Paul. Maybe it was that. You know, yeah. You tried to jump in a puddle. Yeah.
And now that he said it, I kind of have a vague urge. I want to do it myself. Right. Myself and my ex-wife separated when my son was 1.5 years old, and she's now in a new relationship and has a newborn now too. We all get along well. From the outset, I've been uncomfortable with my son calling his stepdad dad. And when I've raised my concerns with his mother, the response has been, this is his choice. More recently, my son, now 5, tells me his mother tells him to use dad and mentions it is his house, which I guess is something to do with showing respect. I also now question the his choice piece, as I guess from such an early age, my son will have just followed what his mother does. So if she uses dad, he will too. Is there any current thinking on what step-parents should be called, and any advice from me?
Oh, I mean, look, it's really complicated because there isn't an obvious name for step parents. You don't say, hey, stepdad, hey, stepdad. Like, it's not something like you might say Auntie Mary. It doesn't roll off the tongue like that, or, you know, calling him whatever his name is, or, you know, Daddy James or Daddy Tom or whatever it might be. You know, it isn't something that you have this clear title or label for. There's a couple of things, though. I think when your son says, you know, oh, it's my mom tells me to do it, just be aware that he may be telling you what he thinks you want to hear. It's not that I want to call him that. I'm reassuring you. Let's shift that responsibility onto mom. So maybe she is, but let's keep that in a place, not certainty, but curiosity. Okay. She may be, but she may be not telling him to do that. And I think if you approach that with curiosity rather than why are you telling him to do that, you'll get a better response in general. And it does sound like you guys have managed blended family life and co-parenting really well outside of this issue. You know, you've said you all get along well. That's amazing. It's fantastic. It's absolutely in your son's best interests because he's really lucky to have strong relationships with all of his key caregivers and to have people around him who are co-parenting so well. It just sends a really good message for him, and he'll draw a lot of benefit. The more people in his life who love and care for him in that way, the better it is for him. And of course, I agree that a child should never be forced to call a step parent mom or dad. But equally, if they do want to try that out, or they are calling, especially because he has a sibling who will be calling his stepdad dad. And you know, when you have a really small child, you tend to call each other mom and dad in front of them so that's the names that they pick up rather than you calling each other your first names, and children mirroring that. So he may well be hearing all of that at home, and at 5 years old be going, yeah, I'm going to do that too. That's what everyone else calls him, so I will join in. Really, and it's easy for me to say this, and I do want to acknowledge, you know, that's a pull, that's hard, you know, because you're his dad. But it's the quality of the relationships that matter over the labels, particularly from a child's point of view. The labels we use, you know, what we call people, that's really about expressing the value we're placing on the relationship. And as I said, it's great if he has additional strong relationships in his life. I think it comes down to he simply may not know what else to call his stepdad. Calling him dad as well does not derole you as his dad. It absolutely doesn't, and certainly doesn't in your child's eyes. Though I think it might be, and I totally understand that it's painful to hear that. The other option you have is, as three co-parents in a blended family who do get along well outside of this, is to have a mature, open conversation about it and say, look, he's clearly wondering and trying out what he could call you. How about we come up with something that he can call you instead? I'll be his dad and you could be his whatever name you come up with. I don't even want to put one in your heads. You know, come up with one yourself. But that actually happens at the child level. So he's getting a very calm, you know, consistent message of, hey, do you know what you could call me? Because, you know, of course you have your dad. Why don't you call me this name? And everybody's on the same page. But I actually try to separate out the quality of the relationship from the label.
Yeah, I suppose you could. And I really don't want to be brutal about this at all, because I completely understand where the dad is coming from. But I'm assuming that the young fella in this situation, he calls the stepdad dad and he calls his dad dad.
Assuming the same. And so
he's adapted to this situation really well, and he can see that the stepdad is you know, obviously the father of his siblings, so there is a direct familial connection there as well, and that's probably good for him that he has two dads.
I agree with you. I think, you know, children, especially children in blended families, to feel that they have that very close bond with everybody in their key caregiving circle, their attachment circle, is fantastic, and to be encouraged. And it's great that he feels so comfortable with his stepdad, that he sees him also in that function in his life. It doesn't minimize or derole his actual dad. And children just don't think like that. But again, I do absolutely empathize that there must be that bit of you going, oh, that's jarring with me. I'd rather he called him something else. In which case, chat amongst yourselves and see, is there a something else? Yeah. Don't make a huge issue out of it, though, because focus for you on the quality of your relationship with your son and keep investing in that.
Just be devil's advocate, because I'm wondering now that and again, I completely understand that the dad's hurt in this. But if he does that and they have a nice confrontational conversation about it, they're still left with a situation where the stepdad and the mother have to start saying to a 5-year-old boy, don't call me dad anymore. Call me Fred or call me whatever name they come up with. And he's going to think that's weird.
Yeah, I certainly, you're absolutely right to say that, because I certainly wouldn't phrase it, don't call me dad. How about you call me and something else? And if the kid's like, no, I want to call you this, that's what I mean. Don't make a big deal out of it, because don't make this child feel he's doing something wrong by seeing two men in his life, two important men in his life in a paternal function for him. That's not a bad thing. It may be painful for us adults, but we may have to find the way of dealing with it, not putting that on the 5-year-old child. It is complicated because he's very young, and there is a sibling in the house who is going to be saying dad, dad, dad. Mm. And it may just be easy, because lots of kids don't want to have to explain to their friends either. Who's that? Who's that? It's easy to say, oh, that's my dad. Yeah, that's my dad too. And kids are very accepting of these things and go, oh yeah, fair enough, and move on. So it may be that he just, this is what I've settled on. I don't know what else to call him. But if it's something you can't live with, then you have to find a way of dealing with it at an adult level and delivering that message to the child in a very calm, consistent way.
And just since we started talking about this question, a few texts coming in saying largely the same thing. One, for instance, says, I'm stepfather to two wonderful lads who from the start called me Tom, but to their friends, I am dad. Also, they heard their sister call me Tom and they corrected her that that's dad. And that's so interesting. Why doesn't the kid just call his stepdad by his first name? That's what my stepkids do. Kamala Harris is called Mamala by her stepchildren. Sounds lovely, says it on the text.
Yeah, so you see, that's what I mean about coming up with a really nice name that you all go, it's still special. You know, whereas if you just call him by his first name, this little boy might feel, no, I want something that says dad in a different way. So you could come up with something like that.
Indeed. Joanna, thanks a million for talking with us today. Joanna Fortune there. You are listening to the Moncrief Show on News Talk.
Moncrief on News Talk.